Weeks ago, eyebrows arched across social media at a report that France's next military budget would include provision for funding science fiction authors to conjure hypothetical future menaces to France's national security. There should have been less surprise, certainly much less smug chuckling. Militaries, the well-organized ones anyway, have always done this, considered potential threats and prepared themselves accordingly. If they're looking for fictional scenarios to test themselves against, it makes sense to hire professionals. Besides which, over the journey, science fiction writers have amassed a pretty decent record on this stuff. It is arguable that such technologies as submarines, jet engines, drones, lasers, and biological and nuclear weapons all germinated first in the imaginations of authors, whereas militaries and defense ministries have been equally reliably surprised to discover that, to cite a few real-life examples, mounted cavalry is not much help against tanks, Imperial Japan had an air force, and Russia wasn't bluffing about Ukraine. If the cliché is correct that militaries are forever fighting the previous war, can fiction and/or science fiction prepare them for the next one? How does this work in practice? And what can we learn from fiction written by soldiers? This is The Foreign Desk.
It's akin to what I do to my kids in the morning. I sneak fruit and veggies into a smoothie. At one end of the spectrum, you have science fiction, and I love science fiction, but it's basically like a milkshake. It's purely for, you know, entertainment. At the other end of the spectrum, you've got the kale of the business or policy world, that strategy paper, that white paper. It's really good for you, but how do you get people to consume it? Useful fiction is bringing those two together. So hopefully it's a hybrid, again, of narrative and nonfiction, or a hybrid of education and entertainment.
Afterwards, people will say, my God, you were prescient. But the reality is, people are like ostriches. They like to keep their heads in the sand, you know, rather like, I mean, other people in the 1930s saying, look, we've got to wake up to the threat posed by Hitler. But come the day, then, you know, by that stage, it's too late. So I'm afraid there's something in the human condition that likes to ignore warnings until it's too late.
You're listening to The Foreign Desk. I'm Andrew Muller. Later in the show, we'll hear from the policy planning unit of the Secretary General of NATO and meet two former generals turned novelists. But we'll start with a look at what militaries like to call useful fiction with Peter Singer, strategist at New America, a professor of practice at Arizona State University, and founder and managing partner of the creatives network called Useful Fiction. Peter is a New York Times best-selling author. His non-fiction books include Like War, Children at War, Wired for War, and Ghost Fleet, a novel of the next world war. Peter, first of all, how would we define the concept of useful fiction?
So useful fiction is the cross between non-fiction research and analysis with narrative. So you are taking the facts of a white paper, a strategy paper, a trend report, and sharing it through scenario, through story, rather than a conventional memorandum or lengthy piece that bluntly is a little bit boring. Another way of thinking about useful fiction is it's akin to what I do to my kids in the morning. I sneak fruit and veggies into a smoothie. So at one end of the spectrum, you have science fiction, and I love science fiction, but it's basically like a milkshake. It's purely for, you know, entertainment's sake. At the other end of the spectrum, you've got the kale of the business or policy world, that strategy paper, that white paper. It's really good for you, but how do you get people to consume it? Useful fiction is bringing those two together. So hopefully it's a hybrid, again, of narrative and nonfiction, or a hybrid of education and entertainment.
Although hopefully more appetizing than a kale milkshake. Can you give us a practical example? It was reported in March that the UK's Defence Science and Technology Laboratory had commissioned you to write 8 short stories. It should be clear that the DSTL is associated with the UK's Ministry of Defence. How did that commission work out practically? What did you write about and for whose consumption?
So they have conducted deep research on a variety of new technologies and trends that will shape the future of not just Britain's security, but the world. Everything from AI to quantum to human performance modification, new energy sources. And it's really great, fantastic research, some of the top minds in the world. But there's a challenge of that. How do you get the fruits of that research to be consumed by policymakers, generals, all the way up to government ministers, particularly when it's in the form of a really lengthy product, maybe written by analysts and scientists? So what they did is they asked us to take their research and turn it into a series of scenarios, a series of stories, as well as we created original visual artworks that helped you understand the conclusions of their research, but in a form that someone is not only more likely to read, but also it's more likely to stick with them. The form that we used was a series of stories that are set in the near future, but they're echoes of moments in 20th century history. So you're giving the person the new by connecting to familiarity with the old. So let me give an example of that. They had done some really fantastic research on energy changes and what they mean for the future of Britain and the world, and everything from new energy sources coming online, new energy networks, the importance of rare earth, but also global climate change, global competition over this. And so we took that research, also interviewed their top people. What do you really think policymakers need to know? And then we took that and wrapped it up in a story that is, it's an imagined obituary of a retired officer in the late 2030s. The officer has made their career serving in wars related to energy over the last 15 years. They retired, they wrote a memoir about it, and then unfortunately they died in a motorcycle accident. It's an echo of T. Lawrence, Lawrence of Arabia. But by reading this story, you're like, oh, that's familiar, but you also get all the key things that you need to know about green energy shifts, rare earth, et cetera. And so that's an approach that we used for the DSTL format. Other examples of useful fiction, we've done it for everyone from U.S. military, Special Operations Command, to the U.S. Congress, to Fortune 500 companies. Again, the topic might be anything from new technology or a threat report, or it might be a positive vision of changes in your workforce. It's basically taking that important new fact and sharing it through the oldest communication technology of all, which is story.
I mean, it is clear enough from some of the testimonials for your work that militaries have been kind of surprisingly receptive to this. I was struck by one from Admiral Sir Philip Jones, who was the Royal Navy's former First Sea Lord, who described your novel Ghost Fleet as something that could help prevent the war it describes, which is a fantastic encomium to your work. But practically speaking, how does that work? And I don't know whether you sat down and wrote Ghost Fleet with the idea that military might actually learn something from it.
So what the Admiral very kindly was leaning into was the attributes of narrative. One is that story is a more effective means of conveying new or complex information. A second is story brings in emotion. And while we don't like to admit it, whether you are at a car dealership or you are in a cabinet meeting, emotion is more likely to lead to action. Another is narrative is more likely to be shared with other people. It's just another natural aspect of it. And then finally is that narrative is more likely to break through the noise when there's so much else out there competing for your mind and media space. And so what we found with these products, whether it was Ghost Fleet, which was a novel, but a novel with 27 pages of research and notes. So again, smash up of novel and nonfiction. It looked at what a war between NATO and Russia and China might look like, to these short story narratives, whether it's for the British government or for a Fortune 500 company. What you're after is sharing this key information. And we found consistently that it actually has greater impact in changing behavior. Sometimes it's called FICINT, short for fictional intelligence. And I think of the parallel with the intelligence game in that the best kind of intelligence doesn't predict the future, doesn't say Pearl Harbor or 9/11 is going to happen. It actually helps you prevent that. And so with Ghost Fleet, for example, there were three different U.S. government investigations launched to keep things that we had envisioned in the novel from coming true. So there are elements of that book that will never come true because of the book. The flip side is there were a variety of programs launched to make things in the book come true, most notably a $3.6 billion U.S. Navy ship program that was named Ghost Fleet. They gave me $0 for it. Unfortunately, I need a different lawyer. But the point is that the narratives helped shape the real world. And again, you can do that on almost any topic. We did a project for the Australian military that was on defense enterprise reform, you know, pretty dry topic, bluntly. Defense enterprise reform is, you know, how do you change what you buy to be better for the future? It's important, but it's dry. We turned that narrative into a short story for them. What we did is we identified their nonfiction reports, three key themes. It's 37 nonfiction nuggets. What were the multivitamins that they wanted people to understand? And we took that data and transformed it into a story that was about a student in War College going off on a exciting mission. It was an embassy evacuation in the wake of a tsunami. But as you read that story, you got their three themes. You got their 37 nuggets. And what was interesting about that project, it was called Eye for a Storm, is that it was first published as an Australian military document. Second, it was republished in one of the most popular online military journals. So far, over 15,000 people have read it as compared to, you know, a couple hundred with their report. But among those 15,000 people was the chief of defense of all of Australia, the most senior Australian military leader, as well as, we've tracked it, seven U.S. military four-star admirals or generals. So it went higher and went further by wrapping it within story.
If this kind of work is going to be as influential as it clearly is, how do you establish, I guess, guardrails around it? Because if you're asking people to conjure imaginary scenarios, obviously there's a potential license for them to come up with the unhelpfully improbable.
Absolutely. And there have been some projects that bluntly haven't been designed all that well. They've leaned too much into the science fiction side. You know, let's go off and hire some sci-fi authors and dream up things for us. And unfortunately, what happens is that they dance in the realm of magic too much. It might be too off in the distant future. It'll be 100 years out. Well, you know, technology 100 years out, politics 100 years out. I mean, you're dancing in the realm of like alien space technology, or, you know, how can you conceivably be reasonable about, like, you know, what geopolitics is going to look like? And so there have been a couple of projects like that that bluntly have not been all that useful for policymakers. What we do, that's the difference between science fiction and useful fiction. So it's very clear. Start with that nonfiction research and then build a scenario around trying to convey it. So that's how you create the guardrails during the design. You're pulling from that trend report. You're doing interviews of those military officers, those scientists, those business leaders, whatever the product is. And then after you've created it, you're providing it to experts to get their insight and feedback on it. So to give an example, we did a project for U.S. Special Operations Command, and it was on what do commando roles look like in the 2040s. We didn't go off and hire a bunch of sci-fi people for it. We started with their strategy. We did interviews of a variety of U.S. military special operators. We then built the narratives, but then before we shot off the drafts, we shared it with the sergeant's course at the academy that trains U.S. special operators. So you had a group of, you know, experienced special operators giving you their feedback. We call it the giggle test. So it's both the large strategy. Is this the kind of mission I might receive? To, okay, this specific part of it, is this really what a Green Beret sergeant would say or not? If it passes muster with them, then it's, you know, both realistic, but it's also forward-looking. So again, the goal is not just to go off and hire some sci-fi people and dream crap up. It's to blend together nonfiction and narrative. That's the difference between sci-fi versus useful fiction.
How possible is it to export these lessons about useful fiction? At the risk of doing yourself out of a job, can you teach militaries to do it themselves?
Absolutely. And actually, we've been running 1 or 2 day workshops with a variety of militaries and companies on what we call strategic narrative and change management. What's the story that my organization needs to tell? And how do I tell it better? For example, we're just back from running a 2 day session for the British Defense Academy. This is the mid-career officers in Britain and NATO, the future generals. And what we did is we ran them through a training session where they heard from everyone, from the former head of the US Navy to the AI lead of a Japanese tech company to the creator of TV programs like Cosby and Peaky Blinders, all about how do we better communicate our key priorities. And then it culminated with an exercise where each of the officers built their own useful fictions around what are the key issues for the military in 2040 and how do we better communicate them. So it was, again, both a mix of education, but also hit key priority areas for the military moving forward. And what's pretty exciting is those products by those officers, even though for many of them, that's their very first time writing something like this, they're being turned into a writing contest that the best are going to be read and judged by the head of strategic command.
That was Peter Singer, author and founder of Useful Fiction. His latest book, Burn In, a novel of the real robotic revolution, is available now in hardback.